I very much appreciate that which has gone before and count it a high joy and privilege to be with you tonight. Would ask that you be in prayer for me, that that I would go out this weekend in a preaching way on a high note, and that the Lord would be in our efforts. As much as I am tempted to just tie on to what Brother Wynn has brought before us and just run with it for 30 or 40 minutes, unfortunately the Lord sometimes says no and we have to go somewhere else. This afternoon I had a thought come to my mind. It's not a new thought. It's not one that I haven't ever preached on before, but it's one that I probably don't give enough attention to in thinking about opportunities the Lord has given us. If you would, for a starting place, turn to the book of Esther and the fourth chapter. In Esther, and I'll just give a brief synopsis, this actually occurs after the Babylonian captivity, because when the children of Israel were, or children of Judah were in Babylonian captivity for 70 years, they were eventually overrun by the Medes and the Persians, and a portion of the children of Judah for a time were in the lands of Media and Persia. And during this period, there's a man who sat upon the throne of Persia named, of Media named Darius. And Darius was dissatisfied with his wife, and through the Lord's providence, the Lord blessed Esther, who was a Jew, and Darius didn't know it, to be raised up and to be the next queen upon the throne of the land. But the Jews had an enemy, a man by the name of Haman, who wanted to kill him. Now, he didn't know his queen was a Jew, but he hated the Jews so much because Mordecai wouldn't bow down to him, Mordecai wouldn't honor him, and now the wicked man Haman has convinced the king on a certain day to have all the Jews killed. When news of this reaches Mordecai, he has a conversation with Esther, and that conversation is found in Esther chapter 4. Beginning in verse 13, I guess, Mordecai is speaking. It says, "Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, 'Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house, more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shalt there arise enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from some other place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?' Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer, 'Go, gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink these days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish.' So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him." In this conversation that Mordecai and Esther had with each other, there's a few points that I'd like to draw out and use that to build something that I believe is very relevant for us today. Notice that the situation that they're in is dire. I mean, we have lived, we think, in some extreme days here lately, but this situation is dire. They are staring at a death sentence. They're staring at their life being over. Now, Esther, knowing she's a Jew, knows that she has a position that could be of some benefit to her people. Unfortunately, the custom was that if the king didn't call for you, you basically were taking your life in your own hands by going in to see him. Because either he'd raise the golden scepter and honor you and allow you to approach, or he wouldn't, and you'd be put to death. And so Esther tells Mordecai, she says, "Look, I haven't been called for many days. If I go in right now, I'm facing death." And Mordecai's answer is basically this: you're facing death either way. You're looking at a death sentence either way. But notice what else he says. If you hold your peace, if you don't say anything, there's two things that Mordecai promised her. He said, one, you're going to die. You and your father's house will perish. But there shall enlargement and deliverance arise from some other quarter. So the first thing I'd like to look at is what Mordecai tells her, that enlargement and deliverance shall arise from some other quarter. What does Mordecai mean by that? He means, Esther, if you don't do your duty, if you don't do your job, that does not mean that God's promises are going to go undone. That doesn't mean that God's promises are going to be thwarted. I'm so thankful to tell you that even though it's in our best interest to honor God, God's honor and God's covenant and God's promises do not hinge on what we do. I'm thankful for that. He doesn't need me, and He doesn't need you. Mordecai is telling Esther, God's already made a promise to our people. He's made a promise to our nation. We're going to survive because He promised we would. We're going to endure because He promised we would. If you go back and you read those covenants that God made with Abraham, that He made with Isaac, that He made with Jacob, that He confirmed to Moses in Mount Sinai, of all the promises He made of the coming Messiah and deliverer, do you think for a moment that any plan hatched by any of the Hamans of this world could have possibly undone God's promises? No. God's promises are going to stand. And that's what Mordecai is telling Esther. He said, God's promises are going to stand. Our people are going to be delivered. Enlargement and deliverance is going to come somewhere. But here's what he wants her to understand. Who knows whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Who knows whether it was God's will that you be in this place at this time for this situation and for this circumstance and for this purpose? He tells Esther, God doesn't need us, but God does use us. And I think that's a very important distinction to make. You know, God doesn't need me tonight. He doesn't need me to preach to you so that you'll understand something that He wants you to understand. But He uses us to do this. He uses us to deliver this message. And friends, even if we didn't have the church, God is effective in communicating things outside of His church. But God has approved that the church be a place for that communication and for that interaction and for that fellowship. As the Bible calls it, the pillar and ground of the truth, the house of God, with the church of the living God, which is the pillar and ground of the truth. When I consider the things that God uses us for, I think, like Brother Wynn has already expressed, sometimes we undersell and underuse the very things that God intends for us to do. Consider Esther here upon the throne. We think of that as something big. Well, it shouldn't have been obvious, right? I mean, shouldn't it have been obvious to her? You're in a position to save your people, so go and save your people. Friends, you know sometimes who it's the least obvious to? The person it should be the most obvious to. You know, I can't tell you how many conversations, and for those of you who are not married yet and are thinking about it or want to one day, this is going to happen. There are times you're going to have a discussion with your husband or your wife, whatever the case may be, and you are going to be bewildered, or maybe they're going to be bewildered, because one of you didn't get something that the other one's like, well, it's obvious. There are a lot of dishonest couples in here. Y'all are looking at me like y'all ain't never had this conversation. I know better than that. Men, how many times have you been saying, have you said, honey, where's such and such? It's right under your nose, honey. Come on now. I remember back when Elder Luke Laird was here for our New Year's meeting. We went deer hunting and he shot a deer and we were in the kitchen preparing meat. He said, you got a meat tenderizer? And I said, yeah. He said, where is it? We went through every drawer. We went through every cabinet. We went through every square inch of that kitchen, and I knew there was one there, but it wasn't there. And he said, oh, Lord, you're going to go have to ask Sister Angela. We're in trouble now. I went and said, honey, where is our meat tenderizer? In the drawer where it's supposed to be? I looked there. Well, then one of the children must have moved to another drawer. I looked there, too. I looked everywhere. She said, hold on. She walked in, opened the drawer, grabbed it, and said, here it is, right where I told you it was. Now, in her mind, it was obvious, but to Brother Luke and I, it was not obvious. And that's going to happen when you have that discussion, that interaction. We might say, well, of course, it ought to be obvious to Esther that this is her case, that this is the Lord's providence. Sometimes it's not. Friends, it ought to be obvious to us sometimes what our purpose and what our influence is. And I can guarantee you that as the Lord's agent on this occasion, the Lord didn't need Esther to do what she did, but He used Esther and her position to deliver her people. You remember when We were talking about Joseph and his life. And a few weeks ago, we talked about where Joseph was talking with his brethren, and his brethren were afraid that now that Jacob was dead, that Joseph was going to take his vengeance on them for all the things that they had done to him years and years ago. And what does Joseph tell him? He says, "Let not your heart be troubled about this." He says, "Ye meant it for evil, but God meant it for good, for I came here to save life and to nourish and not to destroy." Friends, they had a completely different idea of what they were doing to their brother, but the Lord was going to use Joseph to save life in Egypt. Did the Lord need Joseph in Egypt on the throne as the ruler of the land to save Jacob's house in a famine? Absolutely not. Lord didn't need that, but he used that, and Joseph was his agent to do that. He used Esther in her position to save life. He used her in her position to be an agent to deliver her people. Didn't have to be that way, but he chose to do it that way. And friends, today, the Lord doesn't need me, the Lord doesn't need you, but I certify to you that he uses us at different times and in different seasons, in different ways, to be an agent of doing something that brings honor, glory, enlargement, and deliverance unto his people. You say, "Well, I'm not a king or a queen, neither am I." You say, "Well, I don't have some high-ranking position of authority." I don't either. But I can tell you this, friends, whether your influence is little or whether your influence is big, whether we like it or not, we're influencing people every single day of our life. From our children to our spouse to our siblings to our coworkers to our parents to everybody in our community, everybody we come in contact with. I mean, I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but have you ever thought about how you perceive, how you come across to others, contrasted to how others perceive you and how you come across back to them? I mean, I'll be honest. Brother Wynn mentioned how many people went on Facebook to listen to me. I'm not on Facebook, but if I was, I wouldn't go listen to me. I'm just going to be honest. I'd rather listen to somebody else. I hear myself enough. But friends, whether I realize it or admit it or like it or not, the things that I do have an impact and an influence on people that I'm around. Sometimes I influence people by what I do. Sometimes I influence people by what I don't do. And sometimes, friends, what we don't do can be just as damaging as what we do do. Think about it. Jesus condemned the Pharisees in Matthew 23, all those woes, all those condemnations that he gives. "Woe unto you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites." What's one of the things that he tells them? He says, "Ye have taught things like tithing," things like tithing of mint, rue, anise, and cumin, "but you have omitted," you've left off, "the weightier matters of the law: judgment, righteousness, mercy, temperance." He says, these ought you to have done. Not to leave the other undone, not that what you did was wrong, but what you did was incomplete. You left off some very important things. I tell you, friends, what I want my children to see and understand through my influence and through my teaching is not just what it's important that we do, but what's important that we not do. What's important that we leave off, and what's important that we add, and what we do in our instruction. Esther, if she had done nothing, what would have happened? She would have died. What would have happened? Her father's house would have died. Mordecai tells her that. If you do nothing, you will die, and your father's house will die. Doesn't mean the nation's going to die, but you'll die. You'll have a very bad end to your life. But he says, if you go, who knows whether you're now here at this time, at this place, for this reason. What is Esther's response? Esther's response is, "I will go. But before I go, I'm going to fast. I and my maidens, we're going to give ourselves to putting our life to the very best that we can, looking to God to honor us in this. You do the same with your servants. You pray for me. You fast. And I'm going to go and I'm going to talk to the king. And if I perish, I perish. I'll accept whatever consequence it comes because I'm willing to go to do what I can, where I can, how I can for the people that I love and for the people that I belong to." Here in this lesson, Esther shows that when you do something, when you finally realize the influence you have and you realize the course you need to take, don't just jump into it. Put some thought into it. Put some effort of praying to the Lord about it. You've heard me say plenty of times, and I'm going to say it again, prayer shouldn't be the last thing we do when we're thinking about something. It should be the first thing we do when we're thinking about something. Whenever you're thinking about worrying about something or being afraid of something, replace that worry, replace that fear with prayer. Life is a whole lot better off. Esther says, we're going to go into this in the right way. And she said, I'm going to go in with the expectation of trusting that I'm going to be heard, that I'm going to be delivered, that the king is going to honor my request. But if I perish, I perish. You know, one of the things that we have come here tonight to do is we've come here tonight to approach the king. I guess I will tie into a little bit about what Brother Wynn said. One of the things of coming to the house of God, one of the great blessings of it, is it's approaching the king in his court. It's coming to him in his house, with him upon his throne. You know, just like in the days of media, kings are not somebody you just walk in on and drop by for a visit. I mean, I don't know if any of you have ever thought about doing this, but I guarantee you, if you were driving down Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. one day, and you said, hey, let's just stop and have a cup of coffee with President Trump, you're not getting through the door. It doesn't work that way. And even if you called ahead, you probably still couldn't get through the door. You just can't get into the place where the ruler is. You can't just get into the place. They don't have open door policies. You know what? I always get tickled whenever my bosses at work tell me, and everybody else that works for them, I have an open door policy. You can come see me at any time. The ones that say that, half the time the door to their office is closed because they don't want to be bothered. Aren't you glad that God has a true open door policy, that His door is not closed? Aren't you glad that you can come to Him day, night, good times and bad, in darkness and in light? You can come to Him at all times, and His door is open and His court is clear. Just like King Darius or Ahasuerus was going to later raise his golden scepter to Esther and allow her to approach. When we come into God's house, He raises that golden scepter of mercy. He raises that golden scepter of grace, and we approach unto Him, and He listens to us, and He hears our cries, and He hears our petitions. Now, friends, unlike this earthly king, He doesn't need us to inform Him about what's going on, but it pleases Him when we come to Him to beg of Him to be with us, to guide us, direct us, and help us, and to deliver us in a regular and a daily basis. Think about what you and I can do today. Think about the position we have. Think about whatever realm of influence that we have. We have maybe a small group of influence. Maybe we have a small group of people that would listen to us and think and care anything about what we do and say. You know, that small group of people ought to be dear enough unto us and precious enough unto us that we are willing to go out and to get the most powerful friend you could ever have to guide us, to direct us, and to lead us for their best interest and for their good. Esther wasn't doing this necessarily for herself. She was doing this for the people that she belonged to. And friends, our service and the things that we do, it shouldn't be for ourselves. It should be for the good of the people that we're serving. What parents do for their children is for their children's edification and for their children's benefit. I tell you, there's a lot of things that I do in my house that aren't for my pleasure. I ask my children sometimes, I say, do you think Daddy likes telling you the same thing over and over again? Do you think Daddy likes raising his voice? Do you think Daddy likes giving you a spanking? I don't enjoy any of those things. You know what a great day in my home is? A day when I don't have to say anything because there's nothing that needs to be said. That's a great day. Y'all are all looking at me like I got an eyeball right here. But friends, it's a great day when I don't have to say anything. I mean, I speak in church because I'm really required to, but I'll tell you, I'm not a talker. A great day in my house is not having to go through all those things. But why do I do it? Is it for my pleasure? No. It's for my children's benefit. When it comes to the things that we are called upon to do, I tell you, friends, there has never been a reason that I have heard, and y'all please, if this doesn't ring with the right amount of charity, please cast some charity over me. I have never heard a single reason ever given to me personally that I thought was a good reason and a good justification for why somebody who was active in the church, going to church, and supporting the church would not join the church. I have not to this day heard a good reason why. I've heard a lot of reasons, but none of them were good reasons. You know why? Because every single time the reason centered around the same person, themselves. Every time. In some way, it centered around themselves. When it comes to us serving in God's house, I've heard a lot of reasons why, you know, someone wouldn't do a certain thing. Well, have you heard this one? I just can't sing good. Who's that focused on? Yourself. Friends, it's not about what hits this. It's about what hits this. It's not about how technically proficient you are. It's about the position of your heart that God has tendered. I've heard somebody say, well, you better not call on me to pray because I can't pray. If we can't pray, we hadn't read our Bibles, friends. Now, the Bible tells us that we're supposed to ask God what to pray for. But friends, we shouldn't be taught how to pray. You know why? Because if you have a heart that can cry out to God, Lord, help, that is an acceptable prayer. If you can smite upon your breast and say, God, be merciful to me, a sinner, you'll go down to your house justified. You don't need to remember every name that's called in church and ask for those people specifically. You don't need to be able to speak about everything under the sun. If all you can do is just say, God, help me. God, please bless. God, please deliver. Lord, save. If that's all you can say, friends, I'll take that prayer. But it's not important if I do. I tell you who will take that prayer, and that's God. You know, I was reading a book. I don't remember when I started. I finished it day before yesterday. Very interesting. Book's called Robert E. Lee, the Christian, and it focused more on his private life, not really about what happened during wartime. Had a lot of letters that he wrote to his wife and to his children about who he was as a person. And I got tickled at a letter he wrote. He was the president of Washington College after the war. And they had, it was a college centered in Lexington, and they would have ministers from the town rotate having a morning devotional service in their chapel on campus. And there was a particular new minister who'd come in, and Lee had written this letter to the faculty wondering if somebody in the faculty who was a member of the church that that man served, because it wasn't Lee's pastor, he went to a different church in town. He said, I wonder if I might persuade some on the faculty to please talk to Mr. So-and-so and ask him if he might not be willing to shorten his prayers a little for our devotion in our devotional because he's holding up students from getting to their morning classes. Having attended some of his services, I've noticed that when he goes to prayer, he prays for everything and everyone by name. He prays for the Chinese, the Turks, everybody, every country that he can name, for heathens in foreign lands, and by the time he's finished praying for everybody overseas, he feels like he has to get to everybody in our country. He said, maybe some of you might persuade him to keep his prayers confined to the needs of our college and let him pray for the people of other nations at another time. I thought that was rather funny when I read that. You know, you don't have to pray for everything and everyone for it to be a right prayer. You don't have to pray what I used to hear them called bone-crunching prayers. When your prayer was so long, people's knees were breaking if they'd been down on them. You don't need that. What you need is an open, honest heart to God saying, as my King, as my Lord, please help me. Esther didn't give a long speech to her husband when all this was said and done. She basically just said, I need help. And he said, whatever you need, I'll give it. Friends, think about where you live. Think about where you stay. Think about who you interact with. The Lord doesn't need you to accomplish His purpose. But if the Lord has called you, the Lord uses you to do things in His service. May we find those opportunities, whether it's something that we feel is, dangerous or not, whether it's something we feel that might cost us something or not, may we use the influence that God has given unto us to do things that are right and are pleasing unto Him. I don't know who you talk to. I don't know who you're around all the time. But friends, for the people that see us and watch us and observe us, may they see in us, in what we do and what we don't do, may they see in us a heart of service and a heart of love and a heart of joy, to have the kind of heart like Daniel, that whenever they were trying to accuse Daniel before the king, they said, we got to find something on him. And they couldn't find a single thing on Daniel until they got to God's law and said, if we're going to find something on Daniel, it's going to have to be according to the law of his God because he's just a good person. I want people to see in us that we're good people who the love of God is shining forth in our heart and out of our heart and just encompassing our entire person. I want them to see in us a people that love one another and that love their fellow man and look for the deliverance and the enlargement that can come through our effort and through our work. I'm not up here to get views. I'm not up here to wow you with anything I might say. I'm up here for two reasons. To give honor and glory to Him who's done so much for us and to give you something that'll be a benefit to you to help you in your walk, that we in our walk may in turn help others by our actions and what we do. Esther wasn't put on the throne just for her pleasure. She was put on the throne in the kingdom for deliverance for her people. I've been on this earth for 40 years now. I've been blessed to be in the church for 31 of it. I've been blessed to be a minister of the gospel now for almost 18 years. When I joined, that was not for my pleasure. That was for the benefit of God's kingdom. When I was ordained, that was not for my pleasure. That was for the benefit of God's kingdom. The Lord didn't need me to be baptized for His kingdom to go on. The Lord didn't need me to be ordained for His kingdom to go on. Friends, His promise that His kingdom is going to go on, it's going to go on. And enlargement and deliverance is going to always come to His kingdom when she needs it, and she'll still be here when He comes back. But who doth know if you are in the kingdom right now for such a time as this? Such a time to be an encouragement and a blessing to somebody. Maybe it's your neighbor. Maybe it's somebody in your family. Maybe it's your pastor. Maybe it's your parents. Whatever the situation is, may our service in the kingdom for this time be that we seize upon the opportunities that the Lord has given unto us. I can't promise you that the Lord has made us agents of execution for various things, but in a general way, I know that our time in the church right now should be ultimately for her enlargement, for her deliverance. It's going to come, but may it come with the people standing within her halls doing what they're supposed to do, honoring Him. Because friends, if I perish, I perish. I tell you, sitting here and doing nothing would get me just as much as sitting out there and doing nothing. I'd perish either way. But may I come in His courts. May I work. May I labor. And in so doing, may it be a source of deliverance and enlargement for God's people. If we do that, may He smile down upon us and honor us all the days of our life. I have not even begun to scratch the surface. I had several more examples I wanted to get to that I'll just leave off now for the sake of time. But suffice it to say, if you ever hear a voice telling you you don't matter, telling you that you're just good for nothing, I can tell you this, that voice doesn't come from God. That voice comes from Satan trying to get you discouraged and cast down. By ourselves, we are nothing. But by His grace and in His courts, we have been made something, and we have the ability to do things that are not just noble, they're great. You know why they're great? Because there are things in God's service and in God's work that help and benefit His people, which ought to be our chief aim and goal in life, to honor Him and to serve His people and benefit them. If we do, we'll be blessed in our days and be blessed in our service. And in so doing, may God smile down upon us all the days of our life. I hope this has been a blessing and a help unto you. I hope it gives you some food to take with you, and some things that maybe you can do in your life and I can do in my life in the days to come. If it hasn't accomplished that purpose, I assure you that is my fault and not God's. So you leave that to my charge and not His. But if it has, you give Him all the praise, honor, and glory. And in so doing, may He be blessed. I pray the Lord's richest blessings be upon you.